It's a bonus episode
with me, Shireen.
And Anna.
And Anna. And today we have a really special guest who I am obsessed with. She's a good friend of mine, and she has a really fascinating story about her upbringing, and her name is Avital Ash. I haven't even said her name yet.
Avital Ash.
She's sitting right here. Say hello.
Hi.
we talk about her upbringing as an Orthodox Jew, and also her moving out here when she was 18, and it's all really fascinating, so please stay tuned.
Thanks.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are ethnically ambiguous.
We're going. Welcome to another bonus episode of Ethnically Ambiguous. This is Shireen.
This is Lana.
And today we have a very special friend of mine who I'm really excited to introduce to you guys. I've worked with her a couple times in the past, and now we're friends! And that's the best kind of friends, someone that you can work with and hang out and still be chill. I'm going to try to say her name right because I said it wrong before, but it's Avital.
Yeah.
Avital Ash.
Yay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Honored to be here. Avital. You said this is a bonus episode. What does that mean?
Oh. Yeah. Well, so we have our regular episodes on Mondays where we talk about news, and then the ones with guests are released on Wednesdays. And we
cool.
There's the bonus ones with the guests.
Sweet. I'm a bonus.
Yeah. Well, every guest is a bonus.
Still, I'm a bonus. I'm just focusing on the me part.
Your appearance is a bonus.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm honored.
Yeah. Also, I have a lot of people in my life with the first name A, with the letter, the first name of being A. You included, Anna, our mutual friend Anna.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a good name.
Yeah.
Good letter.
It's a good letter.
So.
My friend Abby. We both have friends named Abby. What's up with the letter A?
I mean, it's a good letter.
Sounds
right?
Like a Sesame Street intro or something.
Yeah.
What's up with the letter A?
What's it? Do you have a middle name?
I do.
Is it with an A? Are you triple A?
No. It doesn't really fit with the rest of my name. It's Dana.
Dana?
It really, like, in Hebrew, it would be Dana.
Okay.
Like, my first name is Hebrew, but...
Does it mean anything in Hebrew?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it maybe is the feminine of judgment, because Dan is judgment, and then, like, that suffix ah sound is usually feminine or pertains to God in some way.
What about your first name? Does it mean anything?
Yeah, it means morning dew.
Avital, morning dew.
Yeah, in Hebrew?
You
say it nicely. Yeah.
Oh, it's all coming back to you. I'm going to have to write that down.
All right. She was one of King David's wives, if you're interested in the biblical origins.
Whoa. Yeah, that's fucking fascinating. also, you're allowed to curse.
Yeah. Good. Fuck shit balls.
So me and you, we met. I feel like we met through Anna.
We did.
Anna
we met Laurie. On her birthday.
So yeah, we did.
Happy 1 year anniversary.
Oh my God, you're so right.
Whoa.
But then after that, we all worked together on this like micro series. Like it's like a shorts, like 10 series of shorts that, a series of 10 shorts rather, that were all like 30 seconds to a minute long. And it was called Katie.
It was so fun.
And I happened to be editing that last year at this office I was working out of, this production office. And this producer came up over my shoulder and she was like, is that your sister? When she saw your face. And I was like, no. Because I guess we had like similar haircuts at the time or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And we also like just have big features. But then after that happened, I was like, before that happened, I didn't think about having you on the podcast just because I was like in my own head. But then I was like, oh my God, Avital does look like me.
Do you see it?
I see it. Yeah. If you had bangs, it would be like.
Yeah.
Also, let me take my glasses off. Maybe more now.
Yeah. Just like the big features and the big eyes and the dark hair, I think. Everyone's just like, you must be related.
I'm flattered.
Yeah. Totally
it was flattering to me, too.
Are you having trouble? When I wear my glasses, I hate these headphones. They feel weird with the glasses.
I don't mind them, but it was hard to put them back on.
Yeah, no, I can't. I can't adjust whatsoever.
You guys
have
similar
to.
Glasses.
We do.
Yeah, we do.
We could maybe all be siblings.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like interesting. I think you're right.
Maybe it's the glasses. We all have like thick eyebrows.
Yeah. We're all like on the lighter skin tone with darker features, you know?
Yeah. We're all ethnically ambiguous. Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah. When I was researching you, I couldn't gauge where you were from at all. Mm. Like learning now that your name is Hebrew, I'm like, She could be from Israel, but at this point, who even knows at this point?
Who knows?
I don't know.
But that's the beauty of I think that's you're the perfect candidate for a guest spot for the show because mm-hmm. it's like truly, what are you?
Well, I'm curious, maybe you guys have already touched on this a bunch, but where people think we're from?
Yeah.
Like people constantly come up to me and ask if I'm Persian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happens a lot.
I see Persian.
Yeah.
Just and, Middle Eastern in general.
Yeah. I feel like some people are like, oh no, you're white. You look white. And then some people are like, you definitely look mm-hmm. like Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
And people are always very certain when they say it. So I'm like, I don't know. I don't really have an objective view of myself.
If I really suspended my disbelief, I could be like, maybe she's just, you know, looks ethnic, but is just white. But then at the same time, you look Middle Eastern to me as well. But now that I know your name is Hebrew, I'm like, okay, well, she looks like that too.
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't realize your name was Hebrew. It could have been Farsi for all I know.
Yeah,
I didn't
even think about it.
Where are you guys from, or what do people think you're from?
I've been born and raised in California. I get like Latino a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of people speak Spanish to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Me too.
Interesting.
Yeah, I get Latino a lot, but I also get Persian a lot. I'm Syrian. I'm Arab, but my name, my first name Shireen, is a Persian word for sweet.
Oh wow!
So it's not. I don't get mad when people think I'm Persian, especially another Persian person, because they just like see my name. They're like, "Oh, your name is Persian, so you maybe you're Persian."
Does it mean anything?
My name means sweet.
Okay.
Yeah, same sweetness,
like a sweet taste or something.
Yeah,
Shireen.
And I try to fight that every day of my life. I'm tough, not sweet, but no. But then I get Persian a lot. I get, no one ever guesses I'm Syrian. Like maybe Arab, but usually that's like the third or fourth thing. It's usually Latina or Persian. I've even gotten some type of like, I think someone told me I was like Turkish one time or something. I don't know.
Someone told me I was Turkish.
They just love to fucking.
Not to ask.
Yeah. Or they even think I'm like mixed or something. Like I mixed with something else. Someone told me I looked Native American one time and I was like, sure.
You do pass for a lot of. Yeah. You could be a bunch of different things, both of you.
Yeah. I get mostly Latina and then Italian. Some people think I'm just like European.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get Arab very often.
Interesting.
And where are you from?
I'm from Iran. I'm from America, but my parents are Iranian. Yeah. But I don't. Yeah. Occasionally I get Iranian, but doesn't happen very often. Yeah. I mostly get like some sort of Latin descent.
It probably happens more when you're like in a Persian part of LA, right?
No one talks to me in Persian parts of LA. No one really. I think I am very closed off in Persian parts of LA. Because I can, like, I know when I'm around Persians, I can smell it usually. But either the food or the cologne, perfume situation, I know, because I'm like, Dad?
Baba?
Yeah, so I kind of, like, close in on myself where I'm like, please don't talk to me. I don't have the energy to, like, explain myself, you know? Because I always just immediately assume they're going to be like, well, what are you doing here? What are you doing with your life?
Why aren't you in school?
Where's your husband? Where are your kids? And I'm like, I like immediately get anxiety and I try and hide my, I guess, face.
Don't look at me.
Hide your face. Speaking of Baba, my second boyfriend was named Baba and he was Jewish and Cuban and Iranian.
That's a trip.
Baba is a name?
Yeah.
I could never be with someone and call them Baba.
I know. He was like
I think it's why I would never call someone Daddy.
Right.
You know, like I can't do that.
Wait, that was his full name, which is Baba. I wasn't sure.
Well,
his
first name, but yes.
Oh, yeah. He was just like just Baba.
Baba Black Sheep was his full name. Yeah, no, Baba. That was it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Was he named after?
Maybe
anything?
It's because sometimes Jews will do like Avi means my father.
I see.
So sometimes people will do Avi, like boys named Avi are a namesake for the father, even if it's not the father's name. So maybe Baba works similarly. Like it means father, but it's like a tribute to his father's father.
Did you
father's
call your stink. Dad Baba?
No.
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 So so are you both? So let's talk about your background. Yeah. What are your parents? Like, where are they from?
Both Jewish. My dad's from South Africa, and my mom grew up in New York speaking Yiddish before she even learned English, but like Hungarian background.
Interesting. How did they meet?
They were set up.
Huh.
Yeah. In Miami, where I mostly grew up.
Interesting. I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
Miami.
Side note, your name, well, in Hebrew, shir means song, and then the plural of it is shirim, which is close.
What?
Mm-hmm, your songs.
Wait, I have close songs?
Wait,
the plural means what?
Songs.
Oh, song. I'm just
but,
songs.
Oh, I'm saying it's close, like shirim versus shirim.
Oh.
It's almost
I'm
the same.
I'm sweet songs.
You are.
Sweet songs.
Shirim.
Yeah. Shirim.
That's cool.
So they were set up. Where were they when they're in Miami, you said?
Well, so this, yes, it's a little tricky because I, my biological mom died when I was a baby. So I've had my dad remarried and that was my mom who raised me. So whenever I talk about my mom, I refer to her, mm-hmm. but my biological mom and my dad met in Israel, actually.
Interesting.
Which I think makes sense for why I have such an Israeli name.
Right, right.
And my baby brother was born in Israel. I'm just Jewish.
But you were born in Miami.
I was born in Miami.
Interesting.
And they went back to Israel and had your brother.
Yeah, we moved around. And then when I was like five, we went to Israel. My dad was like trying to build a free zone with the help of the Israeli prime minister that would have like provided a bunch of jobs. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand any of it at the time. And I barely understand it now. But then Rabin was assassinated and, you know.
Wait, so what does your dad do? Okay, wait. Wait, so your dad's from South Africa.
Yeah.
And then he went to Israel.
But
he was Jewish. And so he was like, he was raised Jewish in South Africa.
But became religious kind of on his own. Like his family is not religious, but he became, I grew up Orthodox Jewish. Uh-huh. I grew up like in it.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Like my mom covers her hair.
Whoa.
All my cousins, you know.
Does she wear what's it called? Like the wig?
Yeah, what wig. Shetel is the Yiddish?
I thought there was like a word for it. Like a... I can't.
Are you thinking
is that
shetel?
Yeah, I think maybe. Yeah.
Shetel.
That's the wig they wear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's all. It just you just are supposed to cover your head, basically. Mm-hmm. There's like different opinions on why and what it means, mm-hmm. but yeah, a wig or a shetel, or some people wear like a snood, or even I have a friend who's Sephardic, which like. The Jews are generally divided into like Ashkenazi and Sephardic. Like I said, Ash maybe was short for Ashkenazi at some point, but it wasn't. So the Sephardic Jews are like the more, like my best friend is Egyptian, that's Sephardic, or like from Spain, or, you know, the more brown Jews.
Yeah. So that's the difference. In simple terms, like the difference between Sephardic and Ashkenazi is more like the European versus the brown.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Exactly. Why did I just bring her up? There was some reason.
That you grew up Orthodox. Is that one?
Different types of head coverings?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like her mom would just wear a hat.
Yeah.
And that was acceptable. And then there's other like differences in terms of like the way the laws are observed. Mm-hmm. Like on Passover, Sephardim are allowed to eat rice and Ashkenazim aren't. And
interesting.
Is it? I should probably stop. This is getting like
No, I really do think it's interesting. It's fascinating. Yeah. We don't know anything about that.
We don't really talk about Sephardic versus Ashkenazi very often. I mean, we like have referenced it, but we've never gone into the actual breakdown.
I think it's really fascinating because like my mom, we were raised Muslim. And she
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I'm not Muslim anymore. I don't believe in anything anymore. But when we were growing up, she started to cover her hair in her 30s. But she wore a hat for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Like it was like a little cap on her head. She would even wear bandanas sometimes, just wrap her hair up in a bandana. She's never actually wore a hijab or like anything like typically what Muslim people would wear. So I think she passed for a lot of religions at the time.
Right.
And it's also interesting because I think a lot of people assume that head covering is like a Muslim thing, but it's in every religion. Like nuns do it in Christianity. Like strict Jewish people do it, Muslim people do it. It's in so many main religions, but it's been attributed to like controlling a woman in Islam, which is not really fair because everyone fucking does it.
Do you know what the reasoning is behind it?
Basically, it's so the man doesn't, like, originally it was said, so you can protect yourself from the man's eye.
Wow.
And then it was being like, see, we're doing it for you. That was the original, like, kind of Islamic sort of, I don't know, their way of being, like, explaining that. But then after a while, it came to be just like, so you aren't being too, like, sexual in front of a man. It's like, now it's being like, it slowly flipped to be like, well, now you need to do it because you need to, like, not be this, like, feminine being in a way. Right. It's a very
object of lust.
But I mean, I think people do it for different reasons. I think a lot of women that still cover their hair it's about modesty. It's about having the attention be at different for different reasons of you, like your intelligence or whatever. And I mean, obviously, the countries like Saudi Arabia or Iran, where they're forced to cover, that's a different issue. That's like extreme religion. That's like not kosher. Pardon, whatever. It's a funny pun to use.
I like it.
Halal.
Mind.
Yeah.
It's not halal.
But I know a lot of women, and like the majority of women that choose to cover their hair, it's really for them, and it's really for their confidence, and it's like just something sacred. So I would never like. I mean. I think depending on who you ask, they'll say it's for a different reason, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Does it start at a certain age, or how does... Judaism, it's like once you're married, you cover your
hair.
Mm-hmm. I don't... Well, when in Iran, like the young women, like the girls, like the kids, I feel like you have to start around like 8 or 9, because the really young kids, like the toddlers...
Well, you know. And my dad's family is far more strict than my mom's family. And they, in traditional, like in very strict Muslim households, you cover when you get your period.
Okay.
So that's like when you become a woman or you have to start like thinking of yourself in a different way. So then, but I'm really opposed to that. Like I in any religion, like imposing something on a child, let alone like a religion or something that's controlling you, I hate it so much. And that's why I have such an issue with my dad's families, because like I have so many cousins I remember like that didn't want to cover their hair, but they were forced to because that's like, that's their way.
Yeah.
And on the other side, my mom's family, they're also Muslim, but they didn't force anything on their children. Mm-hmm. If the child wants to, they'll let them, and if not, they'll figure it out later. Like my mom was never forced to cover her hair, and she chose to in her 30s.
Oh wow.
On the flip side, you have my dad's family who are just like, in my opinion, I don't know, just not very open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like anything that forces a child to do something, and I think
Well, it's also That's, very yeah. intimate to sort of be like broadcasting, like, oh, she has her period
exactly.
now, you know?
Exactly. Well, isn't it similar, I mean, to like having like a bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah? What's the one for a girl?
Bat mitzvah.
Bat mitzvah. Like, isn't that like kind of like a coming of age thing?
It is, but it's not like you can have a bat mitzvah and not be menstruating or be menstruating. It's more arbitrary. It's age.
Oh.
It was interesting because I think, you know, in Orthodox Judaism, women are kind of second class citizens. But one thing that we had over the boys was like a girl becomes a woman at 12 and a boy becomes a man at 13. So it was like women are more mature than men.
Yeah. So those ages are like set in stone, kind of.
Yeah. Although my boyfriend is Jewish, but not at all Orthodox. And like his nieces, they did their bat mitzvah at 13. Which to me and to like anybody I grew up with were like, that's crazy. 13 is for a boy. Why aren't they doing 12?
Yeah.
So I think there are like different interpretations, or maybe they just try to make it more level and like boys and girls, everybody at 13. But
can,
yeah, it's
can
just
you
age.
Get into what you meant by women being second class citizens in Orthodox Judaism?
Oh my gosh, there's so many things that are considered, like you were saying, you know, it's about modesty or whatever. So a bunch of things are considered immodest, like a woman. Can't sing in front of men, so you can't sing in mixed company. I think it's okay if it's like in a chorus with men singing too, but like a man could just sing to women or to other men, whereas like women can only sing for other women.
Whoa.
Although my mom was telling me that there are some interpretations now that say it's okay if it's like into a microphone because it's partially distorted. But even that you need
wild.
That workaround.
So you can't
crazy.
Do like a cappella.
Nope.
No karaoke. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess the microphone. Yeah. But
oh,
that's new.
Okay,
that's
okay.
new. I hadn't like that wasn't the rule growing up. Also, like now I've encountered in like Reform synagogues and stuff women rabbis, but in Orthodox Judaism, like women
Don't.
Are not rabbis.
Yeah.
Can't be rabbis. Can't learn Kabbalah.
Which is
like mystic Judaism, which is probably the coolest
part. Or as
part.
We know as Madonna's Judaism.
Yeah.
the red bracelet.
Yes. It's supposed to be like the criteria is you're supposed to be, I think, like over 40, male, and to have studied all of these other texts first.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not supposed to just dive in. I think there was, I remember learning something about like, they say you go crazy if you start with the Kabbalah.
Whoa.
And there's like interesting dark shit in there, like that there's spirits in every room and we're never alone. And I remember my best friend, the Egyptian Jew, Egyptian Brazilian, had like there was some text that said like if you put flour around your bed at night, I don't remember the other specifics, but you'd like wake up and see chicken feet because the devil has chicken. I mean, it's just like crazy shit that we're like women can't handle. It's just for men. Or
it's understandable. Yeah. Anna shook.
Sorry, I'm so sorry.
It just rocks me to my core.
You try.
She goes home and put flour around her bed.
I don't remember the specifics. I want to like Google it because the last time we discussed it was in like sixth grade.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of things like, you know, that you're not supposed to touch even your husband if you're menstruating until you go to the mikvah and then you're cleansed. So that whole idea of like women being impure when they're bleeding, I always hated. But there are also other explanations that say it's actually because a woman is so holy when she's menstruating that you don't touch. I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird. Or similar with covering the hair, like that part immediately when you were like, oh, it's to protect men, to protect them from men. I was like, oh, why is that our responsibility?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Well, that's the
mad.
Problem. It's like, don't put it on us.
Right.
Make sure that men aren't creeps. Yeah. It's not too hard.
But then again, so then people will say, well, it's also that our auras come from our head and that they're so holy, so you're supposed to cover them.
Oh.
And then men wear kippahs or yarmulkes. Yeah.
And men also in Islam wear, I don't even know what the word is for them. They have, it's like a hat that's similar to a yarmulke, but bigger. It's like those little caps.
Yeah.
Look it up.
Is it, in Judaism, I think it's supposed to be to remind them that God is above them at all times. I wonder if it's the same thing for Muslims.
You know, I don't know.
I wonder.
I don't know. My grandpa, like sleeps in it even. Like it's my
really?
Yeah, it's like a...
It's a taqiyya.
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 Whoa.
Rounded skull cap.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just, we have so many similarities,
we
and that's
do.
What boggles my mind about people villainizing one or the
mm-hmm.
other. It's because
agree.
We're all the fucking same.
We're siblings.
We're so, yeah.
Yeah. I know, it is crazy.
So when you were growing up, was it kind of really intense, like as far as like, did you go to Jewish school or like, were you learning Hebrew or?
Yeah. I went to like Hebrew school up until 10th grade. And at some points I was in like an all-girls school, mm-hmm. Some classes, once I was not in an all-girls school, some classes are mixed, some are separate. I remember like in eighth grade or something, I saw this boy in the hall that I knew and he like gave me, I'm trying to remember where he was from, maybe like Brazilian or something, you know, where they do the double kiss.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, but I didn't do that. He was very worldly and kissed my cheek and I like got in trouble.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, because I was touching a boy.
Yeah. He was
but you didn't do it.
He didn't even really, he just like put his cheek against mine.
Well, yeah,
you know?
It's like a polite way of saying hello.
Right,
even
exactly.
Like in Arab culture, we do that.
Yeah.
Who snitched you out?
Somebody saw him do it. Like a, you know, a principal or a teacher or somebody. It wasn't like I don't think it was another student, but that's
good.
A good question.
Can't make no snitches.
Yeah.
Yeah, very strict. But then, I don't know, there were periods like, I remember at one point my mom bought me a pair of jeans and like in hindsight, I'm like, that's so weird because they didn't, you know, and I knew a lot of people that would like secretly like would leave the house in a skirt and change into jeans.
Uh-huh.
Which
so
is
jeans
so
were like not.
Yeah, no pants.
Oh.
I mean, you could wear pants like under your skirt, but for some reason, a skirt was like more modest.
There was a
why.
Trend. This is unrelated, but there was a trend like in the early 2000s with like the pants and then there's like a long skirt dress. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I mean,
like
90s
funny,
weird fashion.
Trend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Avital.
Yeah, you nailed it.
And we're back. We were talking about you being in Hebrew school and stuff. So are you fluent in Hebrew?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
I can get by. I'm mm-hmm. not perfect. I like definitely mix up because objects are like masculine or feminine.
Same with Arabic.
Yeah. And you know, English isn't that way. And then sometimes the tenses like will go, went,
mm-hmm.
are going.
Yeah.
I can, you know, mm-hmm. I can get by, but I speak like a fourth grader probably.
That's interesting. You know, I never, because I'm like, I grew up speaking Farsi, I'm not even remotely aware of the grammar aspect of it. Like, I don't think about the grammar at all. I just like speak it how I think, like how it just comes to
just
me.
Just intrinsic.
Yeah. And then No, I mean, I guess in Iran, sometimes I'm corrected, but even then I'm like, I think I'm right because I'm American, but I don't think about it. It's so fascinating. I should, because my writing's not good, but if I really wanted, I guess I'd really have to think about it.
You're writing in Farsi or in English?
I mean, English. No, yeah. I can't write at all. No, Farsi. It's because also because you start from the other side. You like start on
like Hebrew,
side.
Yeah,
and
Arabic,
go backwards.
Yeah.
That I think makes me very, like, I'm very dyslexic. I just can't write it. Like, I took classes growing up and I just could never, like, I was always like, this is so confusing.
Yeah.
I just know how to write I am cool and then my name.
I can write your names in Hebrew if you want to.
But my family and I have a group text and we write in Arabic sometimes. So it's helpful to like have that keyboard on there. My little sister, who's 5 years younger than me, she's probably like the least strong in Arabic out of all of us. And she mixes up the genders of things a lot. Like I don't even think about like how like when you say ship in Arabic, it's a female ship. Like that's just what the word is. But
right.
But when my little sister is like trying to speak, she'll mess up, but in a way that I would have never thought because I don't. It's wild. But
I have a question. So growing up Orthodox, were you in Miami or like around Miami? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how Miami works. So what was that like? Like culturally, like were there a lot of Jewish people around? Like what was the vibe? Like I always see Orthodox people walking
around.
That's
a good word.
Yeah.
Orthodox. Like a buff.
Yeah.
Like a buff
ultra religious.
Yeah.
Orthodox.
Yeah.
Yeah. They play football in their like gear. I'm curious. Like what was that like? Did you feel different? Did you feel weird? Were you like, you know,
I was pretty insulated at first, so that was like all I knew. You know, it's an interesting mix of people, like South Beach, because there's a big artist community, a big gay community, and a big Jewish community, and then also like retirement community. Mm-hmm. But like on my street and nearby were a lot of Orthodox Jews.
And so your family kept you in an area where you would be surrounded by people who are
like
you.
So I didn't feel really different. I remember it was weird. Like I didn't learn about Jesus. I didn't know about Christianity. And I went to a summer camp and this girl told me that she hated me because I killed Jesus. And I was really confused.
Oh my God. That's really intense.
I was so confused. And I mean,
kids
sounds,
are the worst.
I know. Also, you know, now I want to go back to her and be like, Jesus was Jewish, so fuck off.
Yeah.
You know?
What an intense thing to say, like, I hate you because you killed
Jesus.
Dude,
and I was like,
don't know anything.
Pretty sure I didn't kill anyone, but I didn't even know who that was. But I did think, I guess this is, this sounds so dumb, and I don't know how old I was, if I was like 5 or like 22. No, I wasn't that old. But I remember seeing something on TV and they were talking about the Holy Trinity and like the Holy Ghost. And and I assumed that that was a Jewish thing. And I like came downstairs and started saying stuff about it to my mom, I think thinking that she'd be impressed that I learned so much. And she was like, what were you watching? And it was like the Christianity Network. So I was very sheltered in a lot of ways. And then I actually was like Orthodox still. You know, I moved out here. I went to public school. I came out here alone. Like I wouldn't drive Friday night or Saturday day.
You came out to LA alone?
Mm-hmm.
To pursue
writing, acting,
what did
directing.
What did your parents think of that?
You know, it's weird. We things got tense. And so I think they were happy to be rid of me. But they weren't vocally supportive or unsupportive initially. And now they're supportive, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like now my three younger brothers are all atheists.
Oh.
I was kind of like the last one to exit. Mm-hmm. So they paved the way for me a little bit.
But are you the oldest in your...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm the oldest.
Wait, so, okay. So did you come out here for college or...
I came out here right after high school. I didn't go to college.
Oh, okay, okay. Mm-hmm. And so you were just like, I'm out of here. I'm gonna... And when did you know you wanted to become an actor? Or writer, performer, all that?
Yeah. I remember I was obsessed with Buffy in whatever grade in when that came out.
What a good show.
It was so great. I haven't watched it as an adult.
It's so good.
I wonder what it would be like now.
It somewhat holds up.
I watched it for the first time when I was like 22.
And you loved it?
It was a life. I could not. When it ended, I was like, what am I going to do with myself?
Oh my gosh. I want to rewatch it.
Wait for the remake.
It's so, I mean.
Or whatever the.
Yeah, whatever.
Revival.
Oh, is there one coming?
I think I read something about that.
They always are reviving everything.
Right. I just heard that like Keanu Reeves is doing like a Bill and Ted shit.
Oh, yeah.
So they're just,
I saw that too.
No one's writing anything new. They're just remaking things.
No one wants to take any risks. Even though, like, redoing a beloved movie or TV series is still a risk. For some reason, I don't see it that way.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, I was like, oh, I want to be an actor. And I took a class in, like, seventh grade. And the teacher told my mom that I was way too shy and I would never amount to anything. And then...
Shade.
Yeah. And then this, I feel like, sounds so lame. But I saw Garden State and I didn't know that Zach Braff was on Scrubs. I was like, this nobody just wrote and directed and starred in this movie, and he has Natalie Portman in it. And it was kind of the first time that I was like, oh, you can do all of those things at once. And then I got really into Woody Allen and kind of gave myself a film education, because I didn't grow up really watching movies. I like got a, I got Citizen Kane on Netflix when they would send you the DVDs. And Casablanca, and like tried to watch all, and then all the Woody Allen movies, and I was like, oh, I want to do all of these things. So that was kind of how I figured it out, after the depression of being like, I'll never make something as good as Casablanca. Why even bother? But then I figured I would try. So it's weird. I don't like have anybody in my family doing this kind of thing, but my brothers are all really creative and honestly would probably be better at it than I am. But
I think it's so, I mean, like, it's annoying to say, but it's like really brave and amazing that you just moved out here after high school.
Thanks.
Like, it's literally across the country.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. I guess it's a blessing and a curse. Like, if I had known what I was signing up for, maybe I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
But no, now I'm glad I did.
No,
maybe
that's
amazing. Maybe I would have.
So you said tensions were brewing right before you left?
Yeah.
What was it? Because you were just a teenager?
Yeah, pretty much. I was a teenager. I was drinking a lot because South Beach is also conducive to that. You know, there's a big party scene. My senior year, I had an internship at the Miami Herald and I was published there, which was cool. But it was like I showed up. So I was supposed to leave. I would leave school at noon. And I got there and they were like, we have enough interns. Just come once a week. So I just would leave school early every day and then only had the internship once. And so I would often just like stay up and like go to school like after drinking till 4 in the morning. And then like come home and sleep at like noon and repeat. So like I had a, like a very vampiric, that's why Buffy. Lifestyle. It was really weird.
So your parents were just like, what are you doing?
They must have been, but you know, they didn't really talk to me about it. And I think that's a lot of religious cultures where like they don't know how to communicate. And I think my parents are getting better at it. But at the time, I think they were just angry about it instead of ever imposing a curfew or having a, you know, real conversation.
I'm surprised I didn't impose a curfew. My parents were literally like, home right now.
The sun goes down, you go to bed.
And the stereotypical Jewish parents are like very overbearing and, you know, you have to go to college. And my parents kind of, it was a weird, I don't really get it because I feel like on the one hand it was really strict and on the other they just like didn't give a shit.
Interesting.
That's cool.
But my mom has since credited me with like, she's said, thank you for opening up my mind. Like, she was very judgmental of anybody with tattoos, you know? And then I had friends with tattoos and piercings, or like my friend Albert had, you know, plugs. And, and to her at first, that seemed like he was a hoodlum or something. And he's like one of the nicest guys in the world who, you know, was taking taking care of his very sick abuela and like after his parents had passed, like just really a lovely guy. And my mom started to see that. And so they, you know, kind of became more open-minded. And she later did say, you know, thanks for helping me see the light.
It's nice when you can do that to your for your parents. I think I consciously tried to do that with my friends too. Like my parents, I remember I was enraged because when Prop 8 first came around, they voted yes. And I was livid. This was like back when I was like early college. And my best friend is like a tall gay guy that was like varsity captain of his basketball team or whatever. And my dad's obsessed with basketball. So I was like, I'm going to make my friend visit my parents' house and like stay over and not tell him that he's gay.
Nice.
And he spent the whole weekend. My parents loved him. And then when he left, I was like, by the way, Adam is gay. And my dad was like, what? Because he thought that he had this idea that what gay meant,
right?
And I was like, and he deserves happiness just like you do. And he was like, you're right.
Oh my
and
gosh, then I, like, that's beautiful.
So little steps like that. I think I feel like they've credited me in the past, but I think they evolve and they it's all because it's a lot because of their children.
Yeah.
You know? And
I just got goosebumps.
And now they're all about. And now they're all about like gay rights and like, wow, like that whole thing. And like, well, I'm also queer, so like my mom is like accepting of that and stuff. So
I am too, but I've never talked to my parents about it.
Only my mom. I wouldn't even dare to try to make my dad understand.
Does
what
he
that
listen
means
to this podcast?
I don't know anymore. He used to, but I don't know if he listens to anymore, honestly. And if he does, I mean, he's asked me about it before, but I think he's in denial.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's myself.
You think they stop listening to like TMI?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I mean, I tell my parents not to listen to my stand-up ever.
Oh, really?
My mom has mostly respected that. And then I'm like, occasionally I'll tell her like a clean joke.
Have they ever been at a performance or anything?
No, they watched a web series that I did. My mom loved it, which is cool. And then her Orthodox sisters all got into it. And like my cousins, which was weird. I didn't think that they would want to watch it.
Yeah.
But they did. And then my mom told me there was something where maybe she really liked it and was excited about it. So she wanted to show it to my dad. But this bothered me so much. It was like, if you're going to show it to him, start with the first episode. But uh-huh. She just like clicked on a random one and it's all a Skype relationship, and she started with the cyber sex episode, and it was don't do that. So my dad was like, I'm good. I'm like, why? I mean, not that I wanted him to watch it anyway, but if you're going to show him like a few seconds.
Not that one.
Yeah. And it's not even really vulgar. It's pretty clean, but still.
But it's your dad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, no, thank you.
Does he have an accent?
He does. It's faded, but it's still there.
South Africans are cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like more. It's weird, like, everywhere you go, your accent shifts a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a blend, but in my opinion, it's like a, because I worked with a couple years ago, and it's like a blend between, like, British and, like, a tinge of Australian, in my opinion. Like, a little tinge.
There's just a little bit,
A little what's the word, like a tang? No, a
twang.
Twang.
Yeah.
A twang. Not the orange beverage.
A tang. A little bit of both.
Yeah.
Some orange beverage, some twang.
Yeah.
So when you came out here, what was that like? Like, how did you go about, like, you know,
figuring it out?
Yeah.
Well, first I lived in Hollywood. Like Hollywood, like by the Chinese theater. Yeah. Close to here.
Yeah.
Which is not where I live now.
Yeah.
And not what I would do.
It's not where I would ever want to live, period. Yes.
It was like all I knew, right? Like, Hollywood, Los Angeles.
Yeah. With the like, land handprint of the stars.
Yeah. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't have an agent for a really long time. I did put together a feature that I like wrote and directed and found funding for and like did all in one location that was basically my film school, but I spent way too long like perfecting it and trying to get it right instead of just moving on to the next thing. But that was
I didn't know you made a feature.
I did.
That's amazing.
I haven't watched it in
so it's not online anywhere.
It lives on a private link, which I could send
to
you.
Well, I want it. I want it now.
Okay, let me know what you think.
Okay.
I did think about recently, I was like, maybe I should like screen it with some friends and
that would be so
just
fun
to know what it's like now. Because
it's all part of your growth, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, you get better and stronger, and then everything feels bad. You're like, I'm better than that now. I feel like I like just kicked and punched my way around, like fumbled in the dark, and gradually kind of figured it out. Sort of. I mean, that I have it figured out now, but I wish I knew then what I know now, you know, and had come here with some sort of an idea of the industry, and rather than just like, I'm going to be Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah. Well, what was the feature about?
It was about a girl who wants to kill herself on her 21st birthday because my biological mom committed suicide. So I was like, I think really trying to sort that out with my art. And it's themes that I'm still circling.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating when you start to learn and hear that like everybody's like thesis is about suicide and every short film. And you're like, oh, I'm a cliche. Cool. Yeah.
That bothered me the other day. I was talking to my friend. I'm writing something about mental health, and they were like, oh, it's very trendy right now. And I'm like, fuck yourself.
Yeah.
It is. It's pretty trendy.
Yeah. I mean, it is, but also, like, that's why I'm doing it.
It's a good thing, though. We want it to be trending because we want people to care.
Awareness is good. Yeah. That's true. That's a good point. But it's also not a fad.
Exactly. Yeah.
Guys, this week I'm mentally ill. this week.
It's like the same thing. Like, I have an actor friend who's like this white guy, but he's always just like, you should, you, it would be so easy to cast you. Like, everyone's looking for brown people right now.
Ugh.
Just like, that's not, like you're not helping. Like,
yeah. Yes, I have a friend who, weirdly, he looks white. He's half Indian, so he is, you know, ethnic, but he doesn't, he passes for a white dude. But he was, to me the other day, was like, why aren't you directing? We're always, everybody's always looking for female directors. I'm like, I am.
Yeah.
Where do I sign up? Like, yeah. Yeah, like exactly. It's just such an easy.
People say that to me all the time. Oh. They're like, you're trendy now. Like, you're Syrian. Like, there's not a lot of, you're a lot Syrian of dude and out a woman. There. Yeah, they're like literally, like someone told me, like, there's not a lot of you left out there. And I was like,
well, they say it as if, like, you don't need all the clout in the world.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Like, when I, like, went on the tirade a couple months ago when Lena Dunham was, she's, like, poised to direct this, like, Syrian refugee story.
Oh, wow.
And so many people on Twitter were like, why don't you just make a better one? And I'm
to
like,
you.
I'm like, okay, right. I don't have all the funding of, like, J.J. Yeah. Abrams and fucking who else is on that? Like,
Steven Spielberg?
Yeah. See,
oh, my
like,
God.
Like, are you shitting me? Like, right. It's not, I can't just, like, pull it out of my fucking butt. That's, no. Like, that's, like, a movie. That's, like, a huge backed movie.
Yes. And I mean, even for her to get her start, and, you know, I know it's, like, cool to hate on Lena Dunham right now. I loved Tiny Furniture when it came out. And
yeah.
I think she's doing interesting things.
Yeah, for sure.
But, like, she had a lot of, like, support financially.
She comes from privilege. Yeah.
Very privileged.
She was able to make that movie that most of us could
in
not.
In her early 20s. Like, yeah. Like, I would never have been able to do that.
Yeah, 100%.
But,
and but just the access she's
yeah,
had.
Yeah, exactly. I do want to ask about, are you comfortable talking about your mom? Are you your biological mom?
Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, I think writing a bunch of things that deal with it in one way or another, so, yeah.
How old were you when she passed away?
Oh, I was like a tiny baby. I have no memory of her.
Whoa.
So that was like part of what fucked me up was like, I also didn't know. So I have three brothers, but like biologically, they're half brothers. Mm-hmm. And so then when I found out, it was like,
how did you find out?
This is an interesting story about memory and how our brains work, because I remember like vividly being homesick from school and my mom taking me to lunch, and I remember, like,
you mean your non-biological mom, right?
I mean, whenever I say my mom, it's like, it's the mom who raised me.
Okay.
I'll specify my biological
mom.
And so I guess my only real reluctance in talking about it is occasionally someone will be like, oh, your stepmom, and I'm like, no, that's my mom. Mm-hmm. Like, she, even legally, she's not my stepmom, she's my adopted mom. That's my mom. Like,
that's all you've ever known as a mom.
Yeah, exactly. And I there's also some weird guilt about that stuff, and like, you know, my dad at some points made me feel guilty for like wanting to know about where I came from, even though it's a perfectly natural instinct, but almost like it made me ungrateful or something.
Yeah.
So I'm sorting all this shit out still.
Men, dude.
They don't get it.
No.
They don't get it.
Like,
anything.
How could you want to know your roots? It's like, it's literally what made me.
What about like genetic predispositions? Yeah. And, you know, she was bipolar and I've struggled with depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, things that I wouldn't know otherwise. But I remember it so vividly, like my mom saying, I'm not your biological mom. And I remember like ordering mashed potatoes and the waiter came back and was like, I'm so sorry, we're out of mashed potatoes. And I like burst into tears, you know, because of the other stuff.
Yeah.
Like I see it in my mind almost like a sitcom. But then maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was home for something back in Miami and I made a comment about it. And my mom was like, that's not what happened. And I blocked out like the 24 hours prior, where I went to the neighbor's house, also Jews, Orthodox Jews, that were sitting Shiva. They had a daughter like my age, and one of her grandparents had passed away. And I went over there to pay like a Shiva call, as they call it.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, her dad, somebody was like, who's this adorable little girl, is how my mom told me. Maybe she added that detail. Mm-hmm. Probably. How would she know? And
I'm sure you were adorable. You went to go, do a Shiva.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
And someone's like, who is this? And he said, oh, this is Toby Ash's daughter. But, you know, not her real daughter from Howard's first marriage. And that I came home. I didn't say anything about it. And the next day on the way to school, I said, are you my real mother? And she said, we're not going to go to school today. And then she took me to lunch. But my memory like starts with the lunch. And I don't know. I remember telling somebody the story and they were like, that's weird. You were homesick from school, so your mom took you to lunch. I was like, yeah,
that's,
I guess
so,
that's odd.
Yeah.
But then it made sense when
that's when she was like,
you pieced it back together.
Talk about it.
But I remember it so clearly and I just don't remember any of what happened before.
Whoa.
It's like your body blocks things out to protect you. And I have all of these weird gaps in my history, and I wonder what other shit I've blocked out.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. So that's when she, like, started to break it down. How old were you?
I think I was, like, 6 then.
So is that when she revealed 7? That your mother had taken her own life?
I asked, and she said that I would have to ask my dad about it, that she didn't really know. Wow. And then my dad just told me she was sick. Mm. And then,
which is not untrue.
It's true,
for a child. Like, what can you tell a child? You know,
that's true.
I don't know, but but it's also like, when will you find out
exactly,
and how will you find out?
And it's better to hear it from your parents. Yeah. You know, like, that should have been the wake up call of, like, she's gonna find out, so we should just talk to her, because I already had.
Yeah.
And then there was my best friend. My two best friends were Gabby the Egyptian, who I still love, and Alina, who also I still love. And she, but at the time, I don't know if you guys were ever like this in, like, 6th and 7th grade, it was almost like being in a relationship. Like, this is my best friend.
Yeah.
I don't have other best friends. It's like cheating. So Alina was my best friend. And then we sort of broke up, and now it's always been Gabby. but Alina and I were on the phone, and she said something about my stepmom. And I was like, what? And she was like, nothing. And I remember being so mad, because I was really, like, secretive about it. It was, like, a very shameful, embarrassing thing.
Oh.
And which I think is another benefit of keeping it secret, is you feel like, oh, this is something to be ashamed of, or they would have told me. But I just wanted to, like, punish her for knowing about it, because I hadn't told her. And I was just, like, mad and wanted to make her uncomfortable and, like, have to tell me. So I made her – I was like, what did you hear? What do you know? And there was another girl our age – whose mom knew my biological mom and was, like, friends with her. So had told her daughter, who then told Alina, said it to me. And she was like, all I know is she, like, went to go find herself and jumped off of a building in Israel. And I was like, had this weird moment of relief of, like, oh, she doesn't know. She's thinking of someone else. And then I was like, wait, but I do have. And so then I, like, went and asked my dad about it. And he was very vague deliberately, and was like, the death report said a fall, which even at that age I was able to be like, okay, they probably wanted to bury her in a Jewish cemetery, and they say if you commit suicide you can't, so they said a fall. This is such a crazy long story, and I can't believe I'm, like, detailing all of it here.
It's very interesting. Yeah. This is what this fucking podcast is about.
That's the problem. It's like, there's so many ins and outs when you come from these families who are immigrants. Like, there's they just, even, like, culturally, like, everything is so intertwined with secrets and weird, like, descriptions, and nothing is clear. Like, you know, I've told Shireen this before, like, my dad's oldest sister committed suicide. And for years, they literally would say the same thing. Like, she was sick. She was sick. She took the wrong medication. She was sick. And then literally, like, 2 years ago, my dad was like, oh, no, she couldn't marry the man she wanted, and she took a bunch of pills and killed herself. And I was like, well, that would explain a lot of mental illness issues we have in this family. Yeah. Like, you should have said that years ago.
That no one talks about. Yeah.
No one talks about it. And
it's so dangerous.
It's especially interesting, the fact that they had to lie about it in the papers or whatever, just because, like, for religious reasons, you can't get buried in a Jewish cemetery if you commit suicide.
Right.
Yeah. And that's so intense.
I think that there are workarounds anyway, because they'll say, like, you know, if you're crazy, then it's okay. And you could argue, like, because our natural biological imperative is to stay alive.
Yeah.
That anytime somebody takes their own life, they're out of their mind. And, like, you know, people that do survive suicide attempts often say, like, at the last second, they didn't want to die.
It's always, like, kind of a split second of madness where you're like, and I don't want to say madness, but it's a moment of misjudgment where you're like, I don't want to live anymore. But if someone had literally been like, hey, Anna, and then I was like, huh? And then that may have completely taken me out of it. Just that moment of being distracted. And it's Jack O'Brien. If you guys listen to Daily Zeitgeist, he always brings it up. It's called the coal gas study. They did a study in England when all these people were killing themselves, but when they got rid of coal gas ovens, it just stopped. Like, the suicide rate dropped. Whoa. I can't believe I'm talking about this. Jack always talks about this. It's kind of sad that I've brought it up now. But, like, everything dropped, because then all of a sudden people were like, they didn't have that very easy way of killing themselves. Right. So then they wouldn't go through the process of going like a harder route. And they're like, okay, well, I guess I'm just not going to do it, because the opportunity's not right here in front of me.
Right, right. I have a friend
so fascinating
who really struggles with depression, and she... there's all of those things, like if you find the place where you want to kill yourself, make it really far away.
Yeah.
Because then you have time to do it. And then there's all of these other steps, like, okay, dunk your face in cold water, you know, like all of these things before to just like stop you on your path. Cause just those extra 5 minutes can totally change something.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like I also read like people who jump off bridges, like the second they jump, they're like, shit.
Yeah.
This is actually happening.
Yeah. A lot of people that can report, you know, that live to be able to report regret it.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, but this is such a good conversation. We'll be right back. And we're back. Talking about suicide, I think, is really important to me because I've dealt with a lot of suicidal thoughts, and mental illness is, again, in like all cultural communities, it feels like, so secretive. And I've had family friends who've killed themselves. I've had a lot of death in my family, but it's so, it must have been so jarring to learn that was such a big, because like it's your mom, like you, like half of you, like as far as like biological is concerned, like that's like just so much of your history. Like how did you cope with that as a kid? Do you think that led to a lot of like your rebelling and stuff, or do you think it was kind of just, it would have happened anyway?
Oh, it's an interesting question, because who knows, right? Yeah. What would have happened anyway, and like what's nature versus nurture? But I definitely, I was scared. I had these weird, like, people, you know, would do like Bloody Mary stuff, like, oh, you stand in front of the mirror and at midnight, whatever. And I remember feeling like my biological mom was like going to come out of the mirror and like take my life. She definitely became this like villainous entity in my mind. And some of that was because when my dad would finally talk about her, it was only in the negative, which is probably his own coping mechanism, but like had basically nothing good to ever say about her. Yeah. And now it's great. I have a relationship with her mom, my biological grandmother, and my aunt, her sister.
How did you meet them?
That was, I always like had been curious to see a picture. I didn't know anything about it. When I brought it up to my dad, he was kind of like, well, they obviously aren't interested, because I was like, where is her family? Oh. And then.
But had you seen a picture of your mom before?
No.
Whoa.
And then we, you know, would leave for the hurricanes often. And my dad was out of town, and one of my dad's friends called my mom to just check on us and be like, you know, are you guys safe for the hurricane? And somehow he mentioned something about knowing my dad's first wife, and that his mom was still friends with her mom. And then my mom was like, do you have a picture? I know Avital would love to see one. And so then he was like, let me ask. And so he went to his mother, who went to my grandmother, and she was like, she knows about us. Because I guess my dad told me that they fought for custody and lost. But I think what actually happened, I think he's a very warped memory of a lot of it. What actually happened is they fought for visitation rights and lost, which is so crazy of the court. But I think the courts decided, okay, they're going to raise me as like, this is my mom and dad. And so it's confusing. Who's this other family?
Yeah.
So they were just not going to tell me.
So that family was just even surprising you that they existed.
Yeah. Because they...
Because they assumed that, like, you didn't even know you had her other mom.
Yes, exactly.
Whoa.
Like, my grandma, since we've spoken, and she said, so my biological grandfather, who I never met, because by the time I got in touch with him, he had already passed away, sadly, was either a psychiatrist or psychologist. The irony, right, of, like, that's always how it happens. But my grandma said that they would sometimes fantasize about, like, showing up at my school and being like, where are your family? And that he was like, that's going to traumatize her. You can't do that. But meanwhile, I did know about them and wanted to know where they were. So it's kind of this crazy.
Do you remember when you first saw a photo of her?
I think I'm picturing one, and I think that's the first one I saw.
Did you think she looks like me, or was it strange, or like, what's that even feel like to see your mom, your biological mom, for the first time?
It's a like very weird sort of disconnect, because it's family, and it's like kind of, you know, genetically the most like close and intimate family, but it's also a complete stranger. So you're like, I think it was just really confusing. I'm very grateful now that my aunt and my grandmother feel like that, and I'm comfortable saying my aunt, my grandma, but like they were just Sylvia and Naomi, because they were strangers. You know, I met them when I was 18.
I mean, I'm really grateful that your mom was open to you even being like interacting with them and stuff. Or she was the first one that even broached the subject with you.
Yeah.
Did that upset your father that she went to ask for a photo? Because it sounds like he's a little bit more like, no.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it upset him about the photo, but he was definitely wary about my, like, reconnecting with him. thought, I my grandma has been very respectful. Mm-hmm. Something definitely went down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense even just thinking about a suicide, how you want to, like, everybody probably wants to blame the other party to not feel a sense of responsibility. But I think it's more than that. I don't know the specifics, but they definitely had, like, some sort
of... There was some convoluted issues, man. Yeah. That's tough. That's a hard thing to deal with. I mean...
It's also, like, it's interesting how other people cope with a loss or a suicide. Because your dad, it sounds like, is just very angry with your biological mom.
Probably felt betrayed in some way.
Like, that's just, like, his way of coping.
He also says that he didn't know that she had bipolar disorder before. But, you know, I've realized my dad's memory of it all is very skewed. So,
Well, I'm sure he did the same thing as you. He probably blocked out a lot
of it. Yeah,
that's true. That's where I got it from.
Yeah.
It's so true. And then on the question of genetics that I think is interesting is, like, my mom, who raised me, my adopted mom, is writing, and she's a super talented writer. Mm-hmm. And then my biological grandmother and aunt are writers. So I, like, have it weirdly on the nature and nurture side. So even though I, like, didn't grow up with them, I'm kind of in the same path. And I guess my biological mom was pursuing acting for a time.
Oh, wow.
So there is, like, some
That's crazy to find out later in life.
Yeah.
Like, after you've already decided you wanted to pursue something creative and in the arts, and you're like, oh, this person I never met that had me in her stomach also wanted these things.
Yeah. It is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And we look similar, but she's, like, much more modelly. Like, she was very tall and had bigger lips, but then I have bigger boobs. You know, there's, like, a weird, you're like, you look at them almost like a puzzle where you're like, that piece matches this piece.
Do you remember first meeting your grandma and your aunt and like their reaction to you? Because you were, like, a grown woman by that point, I'm guessing, right? How old were you?
18.
Whoa.
Or I might have been just about, 18.
And you meet them in Florida?
In Palm Springs, California.
Oh.
My grandmother lives in Rancho Mirage, and my aunt was living in Santa Monica. And now she's still living. I know, it's crazy. It's so bizarre.
Wait, so where was your biological mother originally from?
I think they grew up in Miami. You know, I don't know. I should know.
Oh.
I know my grandmother was, like, in Ohio with the anti-Semitic neighbors, like, in... You know, I think her dad maybe was a coal miner. I really want to get a lot more information. Yeah,
it's fascinating.
It's
you.
It's crazy. I'm working on a TV show pitch that, like, deals with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So I do keep circling the same thing. Yeah. That same movie I made at 21. Trying to sort it out. I'm still trying to sort it out. But now, you know, it feels more adult and less like, I'm so dark, I'm going to kill myself. And more just like, what is identity and what is family? And how do we define ourselves?
Yeah, and what can suicide, how could it impact generations?
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting.
It's true.
But so you were saying that your aunt and your grandma and also your brother and your step or your mom.
Thank you.
Thanks.
No, I like that you.
That they're writers. So is that your main passion, you think, writing?
I like it all and hate it all, you know, which I think is, like, I guess you're doing the right thing. Because if you don't hate it a little bit, you're not that
invested.
Oh,
I despise it all.
Yeah.
So hard.
Isn't it you hate writing but love to have written?
Yes.
Yes.
100%. Yes. And I remember there was a quote.
Battle.
Yeah. Oh, God. Somebody said writers are people, I'm going to butcher this, but, like, writers are people for whom writing is harder than everyone else. And I feel like that's true. It's like a thing you have to do, but you also really don't want to do. But I'm so much happier when I've done it.
100%.
And occasionally doing it. Occasionally when I'm doing it, I'm really
happy.
That's
when you're on that good roll.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is gold.
Yes. You're like in it almost like a viewer. Ooh, and then this happens. Yeah. Oh, this is so exciting.
Yeah. That's when you hit a good spot. But that spot is becoming so rare for me.
Oh, my
God. It's so hard to get there. But
and, you know, it's the same as an actor because so much of it is, like, auditioning and trying to, am I right for this? Am I famous enough for this? Am I going to get anything? Am I ever going to be hired again? Versus, like, when you're on a roll and you're just like, on a roll, in a roll, whatever.
Yeah.
When you're like, I'm in it. You're just, like, lost in what you're doing. And as a writer, that feels the best. And as an actor, that feels the best. I assume for singers and people, it's the same too.
Well, my name does mean songs.
That's right. So you would know. Are you, Anna, what is your, like, full-time? What is your passion?
I work here full-time. I'm a podcast producer.
Cool. Do you love it? Do you also feel like you get in the zone?
Do I love it?
And sometimes you hate it? Okay.
I mean, I'm good at it. I'm good at producing, and that's kind of where I've realized, you know, I used to write a lot more. I don't write as much. I wish I still did, but I'm here all the time. I'm always producing podcasts. I feel like I want to do like a scripted podcast. Cool. It's just like I'm realizing like I know I've figured out something I'm good at, so I shouldn't be too crazy. And that's like the like immigrant child in me being like, come on, don't push it. You figured something out. Someone's paying you and they've given you health insurance. Yeah. Don't be an asshole, you know? Mm-hmm. Don't be like, I need more. But I like kind of do, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't want the evil eye on me. I'm like, right. Be cool, man.
Oh, that's a very Jewish thing too.
Yeah. It's a very Middle Eastern. It's just a very like of that region thing.
Like, which is something I want to dog ear and come back to because I want to hear what we want to do. But like weird ritualistic, like, my mom will be like, turn your underwear inside out. You have an evil eye.
What? Okay, I want to hear all about this.
Because I want to hear if you guys have this too.
Circle back.
Okay. Really, I don't know. I just want to write and produce more. Like, I know I'm on the right trajectory to be able to start making my own stuff. I somewhat am getting there here at this job because I've like worked my way for they respect that I can do the work and and produce like this podcast. They love this podcast and they know that we can do stuff and that, you know, I'll talk to you about this later. Jack said some interesting things to me the other day about us, which I was like, okay, you're crazy.
You're definitely going to tell me this later.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm like just.
Yeah.
But you want to do more narrative writing?
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked narrative writing. I like telling stories. Mm-hmm. I like writing stories. And I want to do more about, like, Middle Eastern people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've produced pilots in the past. And I worked as a PA when I first came to LA. And I worked as a videographer. And then I slowly found my footing in podcasting. And that's just worked out. But I've always produced. And be nice
you're
to write
you're
and
a
produce.
Great producer.
I guess that's what all three of us have, right? We're all storytellers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we all, like, pursue it in whatever...
I think the baseline that I've realized for everything I do and everything that like other creatives do is just like self-expression.
Mm-hmm.
Even this podcast, it's just like a medium to express yourself in some way, whether it's through writing or directing or podcasting or anything. And so I think the only difference is that our self-growth and our expression is so tied to what we do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Like other people, it's not like that. Like my sister's a doctor. Her self-expression and self-growth is not really tied to her
livelihood.
Mm-hmm. But for us, it's so intimate. I feel like it's just so intimate. And especially like, I think so many people do what you do, which is like, try to dissect something about their life and make it into something tangible for people to see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that's what a lot of creative people do. That's what I do. And that's just the only way I think that some creative people can process it. Like I can only like, there are some things I can only get out in a poem and I can't talk to anyone about it. I just write a poem about it.
Yeah.
It's like the same idea.
Same for me with stand-up because in a narrative structure, you have to be like facilitating character development and plot. Whereas I can just tell a joke on stage, you know? So you find all of the avenues to express yourself.
Yeah. Okay, I do want to end on this evil eye shit because I am so fucking fascinated with the evil eye. So I will say before you talk about your experience in Middle Eastern experience and like my household, we're very superstitious. Like there's evil eye, like Anna has evil eyes on her in her house. Like you put them, it's like the blue symbol that you put over the doorways. Like my mom has it like in the backyard, in the doorway.
Wow.
We have one in our front door. I have one in my apartment.
Need one in this office. I really got to
bring really
one
do.
In.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with the evil eye. I usually have a ring that has the evil eye on it. And
oh, you have eyes on your
and
arm
then I have
too.
Eyes on my arm. So for us, it was like, don't really boast about yourself. Don't talk about yourself because someone can curse you mm-hmm. with the evil eye. There's like a saying in Arabic, like they've cursed you with the evil eye.
What can you say?
And you see the qiblayn is like.
Is the word ayin? Eye?
Ayin, yeah. Ayin is eye.
Ayin is eye in Hebrew, too.
Whoa!
That's why I was able to pick out that one word.
That's so crazy.
Ayin hara is like the evil eye.
What?
Yeah!
That's wild, man. We're so similar. But yeah, so I was... So basically, like, it boiled down to, like, not talking about yourself, not being, like, self-indulgent or something. And it's also just about...
like staying humble.
Yeah, staying mm-hmm. humble and just steering clear of like evil vibes. And for the passageway stuff, it's just like making sure there aren't any bad spirits or bad people entering your zone.
Oh, I didn't realize that you put them specifically like on any doorway entry.
Yeah. Oh. You don't have to, but traditionally, it's pretty common.
We have mezuzot, which are that same idea, right. Mezuzah on the door.
What is that?
It's like a scroll, and it's in a little, and you're supposed to like, you touch it.
Wait, tell us about the evil eye and the underwear.
I don't know why you turn your underwear inside out, but my great-great-grandmother, we called her like the witch Bobby because she was witchy, and people would come to her for blessings. Like there was a girl in my class who was named after her because her parents couldn't conceive and like went to my great-grandmother for a blessing, and then they had her. So very also superstitious.
Yeah.
And then the other, my mom does this thing sometimes when she thinks I have an evil eye. Somebody else was telling me that they did this. One other person. And I can't remember if they were Jewish or what their background was, but I've only met one other person where she like will roll an egg on my body.
Yeah.
Do you know about this?
Yeah, I've heard of that. I don't know exactly what it's supposed to accomplish, but I've seen or heard or red.
It's supposed to like give you an indication of like how big the evil eye you have is. And then I think she flushes them and it's like supposed to also be a metaphorical, like you get rid of it, but then you do it again to check. Yeah. So there's that. And then it is also about humility and like don't attract attention, which when I wonder how it is for you guys, like it's very tricky with our career.
It's awful. I can't talk about my work. Yeah. I can't talk about myself. It's hard for me to publicize myself or post about myself. It's the worst.
And so many people that I feel like are not that talented or great are really good at just hyping themselves up. And then work begets work. And they're like, I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Yeah. And they sound so cool. And people are like, I want to work with you. But if you're like, I'm fine. People are like, okay.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I feel like my mom's a perfect example of that because she is so, you would never know what she does. You don't know what she's thinking. You don't know what she likes. You don't know anything. She's the most quiet, just like reserved woman ever.
Yeah.
And she's also like devout Muslim, but she's just like, you don't know anything. You wouldn't know if she's like super into you. Like you wouldn't know if she's not into you. You wouldn't know what she likes.
That's
Someone would be like, she has no personality. It's like, no, she lives under strict rules.
She's just inscrutable.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Okay. As much as I want to talk to you forever, I want you to not get a ticket. So where can the people find you?
You can go to avitalash.com or avitalash on Instagram, avitalash on Twitter. I am also working on a narrative podcast, so hopefully that'll be out soon.
That's amazing. I know
Thanks. Yeah. Had a call today. We'll see if somebody can pay me to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Please pay her.
Thank you. Amen. I still have so many questions for you guys, but I guess I'll just have to listen to the podcast.
I'll see you soon.
Yeah, perfect.
Send your questions in. We'll answer them on the show.
Oh, my gosh, perfect. Oh, yeah. And watch out for season 2 of Katie that Shireen will be directing and I'll be in.
It was really fun. You can watch the first season on, it's like 10 episodes of like a minute each episode. It's on my website, ShireenLonnie.com. And Avital is in it. She's so good.
It's so
funny. Avital is in it.
Nice.
I said your name wrong.
No, you said it right.
And she's so funny in it. And she's with Anna Laurie, who's another really good friend of ours.
So she's awesome. She's great in it. Yeah. She conceived of it.
She's great. She's the best.
This was so fun. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for coming.
This was great. So interesting learning about you.
I feel like I steamrolled, but
that's the whole point.
Okay.
You're not like, that exactly. Thank you for coming. So, Shireen.
Yeah. So, as you're sitting there, how was your day? Where can they find us?
Ethnically Ambig on Instagram, Ethnically Amb on Twitter. Go to our website, Ethnically Ambiguous Pod. You can follow me at Anna Hosey on Twitter.
You can follow me at ShiroHiro on Instagram and ShiroHiro666 on Twitter.
Whoa.
And until next time. Stay greasy.
I never know how to say it.